Okay. So welcome to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee meeting. Today is April 15th, 2021. It is now 6:04 and we've met quorum. So let's go ahead and begin. From the committee members so far, I have myself, Lori, Melissa, Barb, Dee, and Leon. And who do we have from the public? If you want to remain anonymous, that's fine. If you want to be listed on the record, you can state your name.
Hi, this is Timothy Bribriasco from Sycamore Unit.
Oh.
Please use my name.
Okay.
I ain't afraid.
Deborah Bykowski.
Hi, Deborah. Welcome.
Hi there.
Anyone else?
Hi, this is Matthew Solon on Cottonwood Unit.
Matthew, do you want your name listed?
Yes, please.
Was that Solon? Did I hear that right?
Solon, S-O-L-A-N.
Okay.
Yep.
Anyone else? Okay.
Cody Meeks on Cottonwood Unit.
Who was having Cottonwood?
Cody Meeks.
Coach Dean?
Cody. No, Cody Meeks.
I'm not getting it. It's got an echo.
Cody?
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. That was me, not you.
That's okay. Do you need me to spell it?
Okay. No, I have it. Anyone else? Okay. So do we have it from the units if you want to mute so we don't get background? I think, Larry, isn't it star six to mute and star six to unmute, I think?
Correct. Yes.
That'll help on the background noise. Does anyone have to disclose a conflict of interest? Okay. So any updates from the ADOA?
Regarding the escalation and the vote that y'all had at your last meeting, I do not have an update for you as of yet. I should have that very soon, and I will get an answer back out to the group as soon as I can.
Okay.
It is on this. It's in the center of my plate, so I know I have a call scheduled on Monday about it, and then another and one shortly thereafter. So I should have an update for you real soon.
That's on the escalation, right?
That's correct. Yes, ma'am. And then on the bylaw update, I was not aware that you wanted me to make that change, so I have it on my list to do.
Okay.
Tomorrow. So I'll get that updated and get that back out to the group for everybody to review. And then I will post it on the website for public comment with all the other IOCs. And I need to leave those up for 30 days. And as soon as the 30 days are up, I'll take down and then I'll have Director Tobin sign off on those.
Okay.
So those are my two updates that I had on your agenda. I don't really have any other updates. Is there any questions from the group that I can take or try to answer?
I have one question. When you say that our bylaws go up on the public for the other IOCs to review, do the other IOCs have input into what our bylaws are?
Well, anybody from the public can make a comment or a suggestion on the bylaws. So, yes, I guess they can. And then any and all comments would be collected and looked at. And then, of course, we would get any comments regarding your IOC, specifically your IOC, back to you for a review. But
okay.
I really don't anticipate much, if any, public comment, but you never know. It just depends. So, but once I get it posted, I will send that back out to the group to let you know that the clock has started.
Okay. Any other questions from any committee members? Okay, the other thing that we wanted to talk about, let's see, going back to the right agenda item, was review of the action items, follow up on our previous or ongoing discussions with the hospital. And the first one was we were asking them about their mechanical restraints. When they showed it to us, we weren't sure if it was normalized because they had restraint minutes in the thousands all the way down to very low. So what they responded was that it's calculated as rate per 1,000 patient days. So it compares analysis of hospitals with a range of population sizes. So it's based on patient days. And they sent an attachment. And if you look, I don't know if you have it, Larry, if you want to share, if you want me to share it. Has everyone been able to look at it?
Yes.
Let me look.
Yeah.
Lori, do you want to share it? I don't have it handy.
Okay, I can share it. So let me go ahead and share, present. Let me see. Oh, it says in Teams error, screen one, screen two. Okay. Can you see what I'm sharing?
Yes.
So this is the mechanical restraints as it's been normalized. So let me make it a little bit bigger. So what it shows is that ASH is over here at 2.5 per 1,000 patient hours versus other hospitals that have been redacted and they use a letter. So the mean is 3.08. They're at 2.50. The hospitals that use mechanical restraints to the extreme is A, obviously, and it goes down. So according to this, it does not look like ASH is using mechanical restraints even at the average rate. Any questions on this? Okay. Yeah, I would like to eventually, it'd be interesting to see the seclusion the same way, because I think that's really helpful, and it helps us understand when we're looking at the hospital, if the hospitals, where they are as far as psychiatric treatment centers. So I think for me, that was really helpful. I'm glad the hospital provided that. And so I would like to see it for seclusion also. So can I make a motion that we see the same information normalized based on seclusion?
Yes.
And physical restraints?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's Melissa seconds it. Do we have another adjustment before we call for a vote? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. So passed. We will ask for the seclusion and physical restraints also. Next was our human rights concern about a patient and administrative separation. And our concern was that medical treatment outside is reported to have been denied the person. And we also want to know about access to equal treatment and separation. Do they regularly get denied? Why might they get denied? Is medical treatment denied? And the response was the patient in administrative separation is provided treatment according to their treatment plan. This includes assessment, appropriate treatment of, we're getting some background noise from someone. This includes assessment and appropriate treatment of all emergent, urgent, and routine medical care that is medically necessary, including but not limited to prompt evaluation of any injuries, new onset conditions with physical exam, any follow-up eval or treatment appropriate per clinical decision by the medical staff with referrals out as determined medically necessary in their clinical judgment. Necessary medical treatment is never denied to any patient, including a patient in administrative separation. If a patient requests treatment or service that is not medically necessary, it may be denied, as it would be for any other patient that if care is determined not to meet medical necessity. So that was the response on our patient in separation and the patient's reporting to us that they're asking for medical treatment. We did hear when they were on the phone with us. I don't know, was it Melissa? Were you on with me or someone else when we heard them?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We heard them asking for medical attention and the person saying that they wanted to keep their job and they had reports from the higher ups that they couldn't give medical attention without getting approval. So that really concerned us. And I don't know whether Melissa, you want to found more on that?
I'm just looking at those notes. I mean, I think you did a good job of summarizing. I don't know if, sorry, I'm just looking for. For that note. That might take me a minute, Lori.
Oh, that's okay. We'll come back to it when you're ready.
Okay.
And so again, anytime we hear that people are being denied medical care and timely medical care, it's of concern. And when we do get calls or have visits that people have reported, if we feel it's urgent, we contact the hospital right away to make sure that they respond. Lack of, and we talked about that, administrative separation concerns. Again, I think as a committee, we're still concerned and we have a request for another visit, but we have visited with the individual and it's concerning that doesn't seem to appear. We didn't get the drawings for the room to see if it had window and daylight and if they were permitted outside time every day and any other contact. So it's still concerning to us. I know if anyone else wants to speak about it, keeping someone in isolation or separation for so long is concerning. And not letting them have utensils to eat food. So almost like a dehumanizing, you know, eat with your hands. That's bothersome to us.
Yeah, it is concerning, Lori. I thought that on some of those videos that they had posted on YouTube, you got a pretty good look at the room and it didn't appear that there were any windows from what I recall seeing. I just remember there seemed like there was maybe a small one on the door, but that was it. So, I'm not clear on that, you know, specifically, but that's just what I recall seeing.
I think that when we asked, you know, to see some pictures of the room, we were told it's the same as any other room. So, and I think
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, for a period of time that the window was taped over, it's alleged, but you know, it's hard for us to say since we can't see the room.
Hey, Lori, this is Leon.
Hi, Leon.
Hey, I would like to make a request just to find out what is the protocol for getting someone medical attention when they ask for it for each position in the hospital. I'd imagine it'd be different for a tech than it would be for a nurse, than it would be for the doctor, than it would be for anyone else. So I'd like to hear, you know, what kind of protocol is there? And if I'm not mistaken, the seclusion rooms are located more on the interior side of the units. So there wouldn't be any windows for like the outside, but there is like a window that goes into the hall. And then, but, you know, not every unit has an outside window. So yeah, it's kind of weird.
Okay. So you had a motion to request the protocol for various people to get someone medical attention. So behavioral techs, nurses, regular techs, doctor, any other actors in the hospital that would have the opportunity to ask for a get medical attention for someone?
I would think that there might be somewhat of a chain of command. This is Dee again, but I don't see why there would be any restrictions from anybody relaying information that somebody needs medical attention. I don't care who it comes from. As long as it goes to the right chain of command, then that would be their responsibility from there to take care of things. But I would think that anybody would be able to make that call and request that.
So I hear two different ones. One is a request for the protocol for various levels of how to get medical attention. What is it? And the second would be, are there any restrictions to obtain? Are there any restrictions when requesting medical attention? Are those
correct?
Yeah. So do I have a second? So Leon's the first on the first one. Dee's the first on the second one. Do I have a second for requesting protocol?
Second. This is Melissa, and I have another.
Okay.
After.
Okay. And then, are there any restrictions on requesting medical care? That was Dee who requested. Do I have a second?
I second it. Leon.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed to either requesting protocol or asking about restrictions? So moved. Unanimous. Okay, Melissa, you had a comment or a question?
Well, you know, I appreciate I appreciate the hospital's response about it's the same right as anywhere else. But I wonder if it's difficult to provide drawings, if it'd be possible to just visit in person to see what the, you know, what the existing conditions are. And, you know, there are best practices. Granted, this was done a long time ago, just to see if there's a, you know, any difference between what is considered best practice today and what those existing, you know, for the administrative separation I'm talking about specifically.
We could ask, that we visit a room when the patient wasn't there, or
right.
Visit a room in another unit that would be the same room, same layout.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be perfect. You as an architect and having designed the civil side, we have a lot of expertise in that area. That would be really, I think, very informative for us.
Hey, Melissa, this is Dee. Don't you think that when they built the facility that they had to have the plans on the layout when they built it? I mean, wouldn't that give you an idea of what that room looks like and the size of it and things like that?
So they do. I can understand for a forensic facility, they may not want to. It's not unusual that they don't, that any facility doesn't want to necessarily provide those, but they do have them. And actually, I know the contractor and the designer of that facility. But I still think it would be good to see it in person, because you never know if there had been any modifications too, or adjustments
after the fact. Yeah. Well, we can, if you want to request it, we can vote and see what the administration has to say about it.
Okay, well, so I guess I can go ahead and make a motion to request a...
This is Dee, I'll second it.
Okay, Dee second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Nay, so moved. Okay, next, let's see.
I did find go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Sorry, Lori. Yeah, I did find my notes. I don't know if I have that much more to add on the recording.
Mm-hmm.
If you want me to go back to that.
Yeah, if you have anything else on that, I'd be helpful.
I think you said all this, that, the individual wanted medical attention, but the person in the background said that they couldn't give it. They had to get an okay first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there were some questions about how long, or I had a question about how long does an approval take? Because apparently it didn't seem like the person responding who said that they could give the okay was able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't commit, if I recall correctly, listening to that.
Right.
They didn't commit that they were going to try to get approval and say, well,
exactly.
I can't do it, but let me elevate that concern or request it. They just said, I want to keep their job, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which again was concerning to us on the call. But we have contradicting facts now. We have the allegation and then Melissa and I heard it. So it was not hearsay. We could actually hear it. And then we have administration saying that they never deny medical attention when medically necessary. So, but my dilemma is, how do you know if it's medically necessary if no one's coming to assess? Right? If you're in separation. Maybe we'll ask that. We understand that you provide prompt medical attention when indicated, but how do you know if someone's in separation or isolation or seclusion if they're not being visited by a nurse, a PA, an NP, or a doctor? Does that sound reasonable for us to ask for that?
Yes.
Very reasonable.
Okay. I think it is.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? So moved. So on the incident and accident reports, it won't be as deep or thorough, and then Melissa and I will give you a report from the civil forum that we visited today. But we had a problem. So it really is difficult to read through 100 pages of incident and accident reports. Sometimes they come the day or a few days before, but I check the Access website where we have an ASH out folder, and I can look at, they don't keep a lot up there. It used to be we had a year's worth. Now we have like 2 months, 3 months worth, and they're gone. But I keep watching so I could prepare and read them this past weekend. But when they hadn't been loaded, even Monday or Tuesday, was it Tuesday, Larry, that I sent the message? I'm like, when are you loading the incident accident reports?
Yeah, and it was Tuesday.
And they said, I'm sorry, we'll look into it. We'll get there. Someone had loaded them in the wrong folder, in the in folder, not the out folder. And, I go where I'm supposed to go, so I didn't see that. And then they loaded the seclusion reports, which are long, today. So I said, well, I probably can't get through those. I was working. So I'll go through the ones that I was able to go through. But again, I wish we had more access for a longer period of time to the incident and accident reports. We used to have a year. Other IOCs, because I've gone to their meetings, they get them. They can go back a year. They even get them in Excel, which is really nice because then you can see it, look for patterns. but we do have one notable one. It was significant. We had a death on the civil campus, and it's the first one we've seen after we clarified that previously they weren't reporting them because they don't declare people dead on campus. They go off campus to usually Valley Boys, and then they're declared deceased at the other hospital. So that's why they hadn't been reporting it, but they did put this in. And it was a medical, it was a sad medical event, a choking event. And they called a medical alert at 9:26 when they saw the person appearing to have a seizure. And let's see, the paramedics arrived 6 minutes later. They started CPR. They tried to intubate. There was a blockage, a sandwich and a quarter. They even did a tracheostomy, transported the patient to Valleywise about 20 minutes later, and then confirmed the death about less than an hour later, which was sad. I know they held a memorial for the person on the civil side. It was a sad event.
Well, it's, that's very sad. Lori, as a bit of an aside, is that where that occurred? Is that a place potentially where there could be the audio and video surveillance
yes.
equipment that we'd like to have updated?
Yes. I think that just for those and for those on the phone or the audio and video, I think ASH administration has put that in their budget as well to update the video equipment to newer equipment. And they put it in their budget request. So they want it also. We think that audio would help because we have lots of allegations of taunting and some staff, not all, a lot of people say the staff help them, but some staff agitating, taunting, aggravating. And we think that in those public areas, only public, the malls, the library, the cafeteria, the day room, anything that's common, nothing in bathrooms, nothing in bedrooms. I think it was really not represented well by the lobbyist for Department of Health when they didn't clearly answer the questions at the testimony that, of course, they wouldn't be in bedrooms and bathrooms. That's absurd. It would be in the same area as it is now, but probably better coverage and, you know, clearer videos and hopefully audio. But that fight's still going on. We'll see if it passes or doesn't pass. And anyone that's concerned, as citizens, you can always make your voice be known. So that was sad. The next one, I was just running through them. This one that was concerning to me was 2021-0776 on civil campus, and it was a patient assault by a peer, non-consensual. But when I read it, it seems of a more sexual nature. When a patient grabbed another patient on the butt, groped her private parts, that to me that should be reported as kind of a sexual assault, even though it's not a high level one, but it is. And I've seen a couple others that, and I didn't have time to look and see if it's the same patient. It's hard for us to see that with everything redacted. But if it, I think I read further on, there was a continued incident. I think there was a note saying that they try to keep, if it's the same patients, away from each other and have them on different parts of the unit. Like when they separate them by like north side and east side or west side, so they are separated. But I would think if this is a pattern, I'd, you'd like to see them not even on the mall together if they can't keep the person safe. I didn't have enough time to look into it. I'll have to do more for next month. But for me, if it's repeated, it should be addressed. Then I had 20210734. Patient had object in mouth, looked distressed, began choking. They did do the Heimlich maneuver, and they did. The foreign object was removed, but vitals were taken. 911 was called, and then were transferred to the emergency room. So that was a prompt medical attention. So back to the what I think was. Oh, it does say allegation, assault, sexual, and the codes are assault by peer, non-consensual. But I may want to ask if this is a pattern, what are the plans to keep the person safe? If this is the same one that seems to be happening, do you think that's appropriate?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't keep happening.
Yeah. That's what I would hope also. And
Lori,
then,
are they not supposed to report sexual assault to Adult Protective Services?
I would think so. I don't know if it's a degree. In the, let's see, APA, yes, they did. Jackie, this writer submitted a report to Adult Protective Services via electronic communication. So it happened on one day, and the next day it was reported. So they did.
Report. Okay, good.
Okay. And the next one is 20210846. And this one was, let's see, restraint, assault. But what caught my eye in this one was they were attending a dentist appointment in the specialty clinic when the patient was upset and agitated. I wonder if it didn't seem like it was off-site. So came to specialty clinic, Desert Sage, escorted out of the dental office. It almost seems like there's a dental office at the hospital. Transportation, dental waiting room. It's hard to see. I was just wondering if there was a dental room or if it was off site. Couldn't tell by the way it's written. There was a dental office doorway in the dental waiting room. There was an issue. They called transportation and called Desert Sage, sending staff to specialty dental clinic, reception area, transportation sitting. So maybe it was off-site. I don't know. I just was wondering if they still, they escorted out of the dental office down the hall, and this was where they also assisted Blank onto the civil mall back to the unit. So it's written almost as if there was a dental office on the premise, out of the dentist's office, down the hall, and where they were out in the civil mall.
Is there one at Valleywise?
Yeah, but that wouldn't be walking
on the premises.
On the civil,
yeah.
I was going to ask, is there a dental office? Because I think when we brought up the fact that there used to be a x-ray machine and lab, I think they reported to us that that's no longer used. And this would indicate that they do have some kind of lab or dental office. So I think maybe but they said they weren't using any of that anymore on site.
That's crazy. Okay.
So was this event on the Ash campus, and if so, do they have dental offices or specialty clinics on site, which I think they told us in one of our earlier meetings that they did not. So if I ask for that, do I have a second?
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, so moved. Let me see. I'm looking. So, like I said, I didn't have really a lot of time to read these since they came so late. So I'll try to read these for the next one and get those to you guys. But we did have several patient visits virtual, and then we also had a visit today, and then we'll also give the administrative update what they told us today on some new updates on what's happening on campus. Okay. So for people that were participating in our calls to our patients this month, you want to start and report. Remember, don't identify the unit or the person, just the essence of the concerns, the human rights concerns during the visits.
Barbara, do you want me to do that, or I can start?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So, okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
So the first, concern was the ability for this person to be able to bring their dog on the unit. And
an emotional support dog.
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you. And it started with, sorry, I'm hearing echoing. Are you for me?
Yeah. I think everyone should mute while people are. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, sure. I think it's started with an ADA violation, moved to potential obstruction of justice. And, this person was concerned because the hospital's supposed to offer animal therapy to those who would benefit. This person has a particular diagnosis that this would help. I know that there was concern expressed about levels and how not having the service animal played a role in potentially limiting some of that. Barbara, you could probably talk better about that. And then also there was specifically called out, I didn't look this up. I meant to do that. I'm sorry. But in the administrative code, I think it's Title IX, licensing for hospitals, mention of if the hospital cannot provide services, then they're required to refer to go somewhere that can if they can't provide that support. So these were some of the concerns and questions that were raised. Okay. I don't know, Barbara, if you want to add to that.
Barb, you're on mute. Barb, you're still on mute. Okay, so do we want
there,
to...
sorry.
Okay.
So I don't have anything to add to what Melissa said on that. And I don't know either because, what is allowed and what isn't in terms, of having with the ADA and in terms of having... a support dog in a hospital setting. I know regular hospitals have programs where they have dogs visit, that owners whose dogs are trained
have therapy dogs come. But that's...
Yeah, this is Dee. I actually, last year, right before COVID hit, I had a group, I've got a group that agreed to go to the hospital, that they were, we were just going to try to make arrangements for them to be in touch with the hospital so that they could agree to that or not. And then COVID hit and everything shut down. But I still have their information, and they said that there's no charge to the hospital. They're happy to come out there. They have no problem. I, you know, gave, you know, the demographics and, you know, the understanding of what type of facility it was. And they said that didn't matter. They'd be happy to do that. And I've seen some of the service dogs coming in and out of some of the assisted living facilities here in Tucson. So I know people are doing it again. So just something to think of.
This is Leon.
Mm-hmm.
So there used to be service animals that would come into the hospital. They would come in maybe once every few weeks. And the animals themselves actually did pass away. And the lady that used to do it, she just stopped. She stopped coming. She didn't, I don't know what happened with that whole situation. But from what I understand, the hospital just didn't make any effort to try to come up with another contract to get somebody else to come back in. But that did happen during my stay.
And I that would be great if that program could be brought back, but that's not what this gentleman is looking for. He's looking to have his own support dog be allowed there.
Yeah.
And you know,
yeah, I've been in some of those conversations with him, and you know, you kind of feel for him. I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that there hasn't been, you know, accommodations made for he and his dog. However, you know, if we could, in the meantime, maybe have the hospital agree that some therapy animals could come back in while this issue is worked out, that might be helpful for him and a lot of the other patients.
Yes, I would think that. I mean, not looking at any laws or anything, but I would think that the hospital's comeback would be, well, if everybody, you know, if every person winds up with a support dog, we'll be feeding the dogs, or, you know, and the hospital, they'll be pooping. And, you know, but not that, you know, there's a lot of patients being admitted every day that have that. But I just think they'd be using things like, well, how are you going to take care of them? You know, they're going to pee and poop and have to be fed. And
but that if it's ADA and you have a disability and you have a support dog and it's documented, this is not the emotional support dog, but actual service dogs that can do tasks. I think it would be a violation of the ADA laws not to, but.
You know, I see where you're coming from, Lori, but I am of the school that, you know, picking our battles on this one would be wise, just because it's a little different when it's a public facility, but this is more of a private facility, you know, owned by the state. And so I don't know how that crosses over into the ADA in terms of a service dog, but that would be something we would need. I would imagine we would want to get information about first before we pursue it. That's my suggestion.
I don't see why, though. At least the dog couldn't be allowed visitation with his owner. The dog doesn't have to be there for any great length of time, and they could find an area where, you know, he could at least spend some time with the dog, you know, whatever designated time frame and frequency.
So, Jack, you have your hand up. We can't hear you. Okay, now we can.
Okay, I've been having difficulty. I apologize for being late. Here's the Center for Disability Law is already involved in this case, period.
Oh, okay.
So I've seen letters between the two, so my sense is I would agree with your previous speaker that you pick your battles. This isn't one that you want to pick.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so we'll move on from that. So on... So we looked at, so basically his concern was mostly on his support animals and no levels, concerned with his levels being met, right?
Right.
Okay. Which is a common concern through this period that has kind of stopped all progression past a certain level. Okay. Any other, I know there were some other visits, and then we'll talk about our civil campus visit and some ASH updates. So do you guys want to talk about your other visit?
Yes, I'm sorry. It took me a second.
Sorry.
Ahead.
I actually don't have my notes with me right now. I'm sorry.
I can.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, actually.
I grabbed the wrong notebook. I have too many notebooks going on.
This person had a pretty clear concern. And it was this person's concern that the hospital did not have an effective plan to balance the safety and the needs to reintegrate the patients back into the community. And at that time, because this was, you know, about 12 days ago, they had not, you know, there had been no patient forum in over a year.
Yeah.
And also commented that there was nothing at all, whether it was in person or virtual.
And I know that's a common, that's something we've asked about a lot, and we got some update today in the civil, but it will be interesting to see how they manage getting people back to their level progression. And
I should probably add, you know, it was this person's opinion. You know, on the website, it said when the leases level off, right? As we also heard today. And you know, the person was concerned about erring so much on the safety and not necessarily the treatment needs.
Okay. So ASH is basically telling us, and we heard it today, is that they're basing when they're going to open up further and go out for outings and go back to contact visits. It's when the community level of spread is meeting a certain point, which they're now. But they did say that they're monitoring the community spread and at this point, but it could change at any time, on 4/26/21, so in about 2 weeks, they will start permitting contact visits, and food visits will be permitted. The cafe will be opening with food in the cafe. There was some discussions on family forums where families could come and make suggestions and give feedback on what their experiences have been. They used to do that. So they took a note that they follow up on that. They talked again about that they're opening the pool. The pool's being cleaned and it will be open by Memorial Day. There was a request to have the heated pool, but that costs money. So I don't think that they're looking at that. We did look, they built a new chapel in, it's a small chapel, but it's quite, it's nice. We're on the civil campus today. We saw a lot of improvements. They have turf now instead of rocks, a lot of areas, and they have a tarp to provide shading, and they've installed a lot of benches on the mall. So they're using funds from like the vending machines and, to help improve and try to, you know, beautify or provide more things, more options for the patients.
So, hey, Lori, I have some questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
So have we talked about at all, you know, I know I haven't been to the last few, but have we talked or heard anything about vaccinations being provided for patients who want to volunteer to get vaccinated? And if so, why is that not a path for patients who have their level to be able to do at least minimal community integration so that they can at least progress in their levels. I understand.
Well, they have vaccinated. I think it was a meeting or two ago when they started vaccinating patients that had approval if they had guardians or didn't have contraindications to getting vaccinated. So I think, and I don't know the numbers, I don't think they told us the numbers, but they were vaccinating patients and staff, but I don't know if that's varied their position on outings or going into the community, even if you're vaccinated. I know that for us going on campus today, they requested that only vaccinated people, and Melissa and I are vaccinated, and we went there and we were wearing masks, as were all the staff. Some of the patients weren't. So I think they've lifted some of the restrictions on patients wearing masks.
Well,
Lori,
it's
my understanding there was like 80% of the staff and the patients have been vaccinated up to this point.
I would like to make a motion.
Okay.
I would like to make a motion for some sort of, how should I put this? Basically, at least consideration for those who have been vaccinated, because there's obviously staff who come in and off of those units from the mm-hmm. community every day. And I do not see the difference between a patient who's been vaccinated, who integrates into the community and then comes back after a few hours, and a staff member. So I would like to make a motion that there be some sort of consideration for this, or that we ask that there be some consideration.
Yeah.
I that's only common sense.
We could request that they have consideration. I think that's absolutely a valid concern, because they're going in and out also. Maybe they say you're vaccinated plus you have to mask when you're out. Okay, if I do those things, can I go off campus, right? But at least
I second his motion. This is Dee. I second Leon's motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so moved.
Yeah. I would just like to add a little caveat that I would say that the integration would be with staff just to make sure that they have those masks on mm-hmm. at all times.
Yeah.
And that would be my caveat that I would say.
Okay. Everyone agree with that caveat? Okay. Anyone opposed to it? Okay. So that edit is added. The other thing that I heard, and then Melissa can tell you also, there were people that had been there a while, like from 2010, and the person said, the schedule's so bad now, why can't it go back to how it was? He said in the old days, they had a lot more time outside on the mall and outside premises. This is their schedule now, according to a patient. 5 a.m. wake-up call, 6 a.m. get yourself showered and ready, 7 a.m. meds. They're supposed to get their breakfast at 8, but it's been taking till almost 9, and that's due to a changeover in the food service. They're all new, but they're working on it. They're trying to improve that. So they have an 8 to 8:30 mall time and 11:30 to 12 mall time. But it used to be on the weekends they could go outside. There were rovers, but now they don't have rovers on the weekends. The rovers are, I think, staff that can multi-cover many units and go to any code calls that happen. They want to have more time back out in programming and out on the malls post-COVID. There was also a request for shoelaces and belts, and they've come up with some new item that is a little stretchy item that goes and replaces shoelaces, but a small item that stretches. So we didn't see one, but they said that they were piloting on the civil side and it's going well, so that should be rolled out. Some people want the juice machine fixed, some people want to smoke again, and the new CMO was there, Dr. I think Catherine or Kathleen Woods, and I think someone responded that, you know, none of the hospitals are smoking hospitals anymore due to health concerns. And someone asked about schooling. Why can't they go to school? And this is someone that has been there a short time, 5 months, and asked about that. So I prompted the group. I responded that we did get a philanthropic fund that I found that said they would pay for education. And I took it as far as I could, and then I turned it over to Ash to work out the details on how they're going to give the money, how they're going to get reports on who's using it, stuff like that. And then everything went on hold because of COVID. But we asked, hopefully they can look into that again. Another patient asked about Mark vocational training, vocational work. They want to know when Mark coming back on site to do that kind of piecemeal work and help with vocational training. So these are things that would be taken up to the executive level. Dr. Bowen wasn't there. Let's see. They want the movies. They used to have movies on big screens, and that stopped. I think they indicated, if I recall correctly, Melissa, that they were going to start the big screen movies again. They are doing more groups.
Yes.
Yeah, and the groups seem to have varied approval and success and varied levels of what they think would be therapeutic, but they're improving, but they want more, and they want more of real group sessions, not just coloring and things like that. But they said there's variation, but it is picking back up. And then they also, one person was very, did not believe that the patient advocate was advocating for them effectively and thought that they were very unprofessional and very disrespectful. And that so I said, you know, well, you can ask for a visit with us. Our only restriction, and I know we have one patient that has asked for a visit and we haven't been able to do it, is we can only do it when we have at least two people. If we don't have two people, we can't visit. But I let them know that they could talk to us as well. So Melissa?
You did a good job, Lori. The only thing I wasn't sure, did you mention that there was just some question about when the cafe is opening?
Mm-hmm.
We might have said that earlier. And it wasn't said straight out, but I think there was maybe concern, if I read between the lines, Lori, about maybe more nutritional snacks being available.
I had that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they were saying that the dietitian was calling someone fat, saying, "Well, you're fat," you know, and they're not giving them enough food. And then with that happening, they said, "Well, then we go out and we eat from the vending machines, and that's not healthy." So I said, "Why can't we have, you know, fruit, or why can't we have more nutritious snacks? Why are you, you know, making and you shouldn't call us fat." Yeah. So we did hear that.
That's totally reprehensible on the dietitian's part.
Yeah. So that was our visit today on the civil. We will have a forensic visit on the 23rd. Yeah. Far as progression for alternative path for patient progression, trying to make up for this year, there's nothing that's been submitted, and we didn't have time to get an update on them. But again, there's an interest in getting education. I think it's still kind of not really advanced, that they want the patients to do correspondence courses instead of online internet. I mean, it would be so much easier with, you know, they could put software where they could only go to the school site, they could monitor, but right now they're only doing correspondence courses, which really limits the availability.
I would like to speak to that, because I receive a, you know, my associates through correspondence courses, and though it wasn't as convenient, it was, I'm just glad to hear that they're doing correspondence courses, because you can succeed even through that method. But I had a question for you.
Excuse me.
How are they doing on exercise? Are they getting any kind of fitness?
I think that was another thing. Thank goodness you reminded me. I didn't take good notes. They were asking when the gym was going to be reopened, and they did ask about getting back and getting foosball. Yeah, they wanted to know when the foosball and a few other items and the pool. Let's see, foosball, what else? They did want to know
basketball.
When that's going to be. Basketball and a few others. So it seems
pool
like they...
Pool table, yeah, excuse me.
Yeah, and they seems like they haven't been getting it during COVID, and they asking to have it reinstated. If they're all walking around without masks now and they're vaccinated and they're limited, they're like a cohort anyway.
Exactly.
They might as well have them exercise.
For sure. This is definitely a necessity. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what we had on the civil campus. Jack, since you're here, do you want to give us an update from your IOC? And I'm sorry, I didn't get your agenda. I would have joined last night.
Well, you didn't get, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You didn't get it because it's next week.
Oh, good.
It happens to be next week is the third Wednesday.
Okay.
I think, Lori, you were present at the quarterly chair meeting, were you not?
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I have competing meetings this evening, one with the Psychiatric Society, anyone here. Frankly, I felt very good about the IOC and access and the way that's gone. Mm-hmm. They've been very proactive with us. They, for example, stated that in the future they anticipate running some of the proposed regs or rules, new ones, through us before they post them for public comment. And I thought that's a very big positive step. And other than that, we'll have our meeting next week. There's nothing to report else. I had a question, if I may. What's happening with the state hospital proposal change of governing committee? I think that's going forward, is it not?
Right now, we're getting some feedback from you, Barb.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think for the bills that are going through, the ASH legislative bills, there's two on the PSRB. PSRB reforms, they passed the committees that they've been before, and they have to see if they get presented again to the larger, I think, House. So that is in action. I think that with the latest horrific event that just happened in the Valley, it may get more attention now.
We had our lobbyist from Senator Wilmer talk to us about what those were. I'm wondering specifically about the governing board and the one that affects your IOC. I think it's, I forget, 17 something.
What's yes, 1716 was the ASH bill, and the 1029 and 1030 one has to do with, involved in those, but one has to do with moving the governing board, the PSRB, back to the Superior Court. The other one has to do with
But what about 17? What about the one that affects you, Lori? The 1029, 1030, I know what's happening with that. They're in a compromise committee now. What about the other one, though, that affects you directly, saying you get a chair on the thing? And
That was in the PSRB. They don't want the chair there. Basically, what they said during testimony, the lobbyist said that the IOC chair had been invited and declined to ever come. And that I wrote a letter back saying, show me proof of one invitation. I have never gotten an invitation. I went once 4 years ago with Sharon, but we've never been invited. So that was an alternative fact. And they don't want us sitting on the board, even as a non-voting member. But
I think, yeah, what about 1716?
1716, which is the audio, video.
Yeah, 1716.
I think there's concerns on bringing audio in, and there's concerns on the cost. And then as far as we had to remove the bed limit restriction. 55 beds because of they don't want to open up Arnold B. Sarn. So that will go into a working committee with hopefully the previous parties to work out that there won't be a suit at some point. I mean, when we hit 7 million people, 55 beds still good? I mean, it's absurd, you know.
So 1716 has been
hobbling along.
Neutered. It's been neutered.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure. Yeah. I know you're following that closely. No, and there's.
I think with what's just happened in the community, that maybe there'll be more attention paid usually after these terrible events, people pay attention. So maybe they will look at it more seriously.
Well, yeah, that's 10:29 and 10:30 essentially.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if any of your committee members have questions for me. Well, I'm here and I apologize.
Yeah. So do you have any questions for Dr. Potts? I think you missed earlier, but we shared that Ash had shared with us where they stood in mechanical restraints. And they said the national, the rate per 100,000 patient hours is 3.08. Ash sits at 2.50. Wow. The hospitals with the most mechanical restraints sits at 26.1, and then it drops to 21, 8, 6, 5, 4, and then it tapers off. The best one sits at 0.28, and then the next to best is 0.38. I bet it's Pennsylvania after their reform.
That's great. Thank you. That is important to hear. Thank you, Lori.
And we're going to ask for those same normalized numbers for seclusion and restraints, too.
Makes sense.
Anyone have questions for Dr. Potts? He is a forensic psychiatrist with a long history in the behavioral health system. So, Jack, we had one earlier. We had a discussion on there is a patient that calls for human rights visits quite often, and this person remains in administrative seclusion and has for many, many months. And we asked to see the drawings and if they had daylight and anything like that. And we were told it's the same as every other seclusion room or something to that effect. But, I mean, do you have any experience with keeping what the best practices are with keeping someone in seclusion for months on end? Even up to a year or more?
Yeah. Yes. I've testified on that in the federal court. I would suggest that it's important on that person. First of all, I remember you were discussing it. You were talking about getting the architect's drawings, et cetera. When you went on a tour, I'm sure you saw the different seclusion rooms, right?
No, we didn't go on. We didn't get to see that.
Okay. That's important to do, obviously. Number one. Number two, you may want to get a specific behavioral treatment plan, what that is for that individual, how many hours out, how much time out, et cetera. That's what I would suggest, because that can make a difference. You know, because it's important to know where the seclusion fits into a treatment plan. Otherwise, it's punitive, as you know, better than I do.
Yeah.
There is a lot on how seclusion can be damaging. In that work was done out of Stanford. So we can talk about that later. But I think it's that Are they giving you information on this patient specifically? Are you asking for the charts, et cetera?
We haven't requested their charts, but what we have requested, they were supposed, I think the person was supposed to ask for time out instead of being offered time out an hour a day. And then we requested that they remind the patient that they can go out. The patient claims that they don't get to go out. Sometimes they're short-staffed and everything. They don't see any human contact. They get a tray shoved into the room. They eat with their hands.
Well, you know, I've dealt with this for years. Number one is, yes, they frequently don't let, they say, do you want to go out now? And the person says no, because it's not convenient, it's not scheduled. So those are things I think the IOC can look at. Let's schedule specific times. Sometimes in the prison system, the timeout scheduled at 2 a.m. You know, it's like no one wants to get up. No, I don't want to take my time out at this point because they have other people. So my sense is maybe it's time for the committee to say we want specific records on this individual. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, my experience is when there's seclusion or when there's an isolation, they have usually 15 or 30 minute logs that are kept by the staff. I know in the prison system that's standard of care. And mandatory, essentially. I think it is probably in the hospital as well. You may want to see what those indicate. And then what's sometimes, I hate to say it, but some patients do prefer isolation, but then that's an issue because that may be because of based on the psychosis. I have an individual been in jail now 4 years who wants to be in isolation because he's thinking that he is causing distress to the eardrums of all the other inmates around him and they're going to retaliate. Mm. So, you know, it's based on a psychotic process. So maybe it's time to start saying, hey, we want to push it and say, hey, we now want to see his records. We have a right to get those records. Just a thought. Mm. And you've obviously got the policies and procedures for this. There's probably a special committee that goes that they have to go to for prolonged seclusion, I would suggest, or isolation.
We did ask about that, and they make a clear distinction between seclusion. With seclusion, like you said, every 15 minutes you have to say what behaviors are you seeing, are they, and chart it. And then every 24 hours you need a doc sign off. But for separation, I don't think those rules have applied. They don't have the 15 minute and the every day. They're in an administrative separation, not a seclusion.
Right, administrative segregation, but you still have to have a reason for it. In prisons, they do that. Yeah, it's different than, but it's also for breaking rules. Usually if it's administrative segregation, it's because the person is can't be in population. Then how they deal with that with the behavior plan. You know, if you get that stuff, I'd be interested. I'd be willing to help you look at it. I don't have the there's some research that I had years ago when we testified in this Department of Corrections was doing this and elsewhere. But yeah, you may want to look at this individual. Have you been able to talk to this individual?
Yes. And he's requested, we've talked to him frequently and he's requested another visit. And he actually has, it's concerning to us because he's been in isolation. He was in isolation for a long period of time, got out. There was an incident back in, and I think he said his plan, it looks like he'd be in there for 2 years if he's on perfect behavior. My concern is, how do you teach someone to behave and reintegrate if you keep in isolation for 2 years?
You can't, and that wouldn't be an appropriate plan for anyone. That's punitive. Does he have family?
Yes, and the family has called also.
Okay, well, it's a time to get his records and look what the individualized behavior plan is on this person. And look at this, you know, I mean, yeah, that would be, is he on this forensic unit?
Yes.
Yeah, since I'm a member of your committee, ad hoc, I'd have a right to look at the records as well because I've signed confidentiality agreements, but if you want me to, I'll be glad to look at it with you or assist you in this issue. But I would drill down now and say, what's the individual's behavior plan on it? And ask for the policies on ADSEG If you haven't seen the policies on administrative segregation, they have to have them. If they don't have them, then it's the problem. That'd be my thought.
Yeah. Lori, didn't he give us his individualized treatment plan a while back? Remember when we asked him for some documentation and he said he didn't have anything to write with, but I think he used like a crayon or something like that in the margin?
Yeah. And I think if I recall seeing it, it was something absurd, like he had to be at each level for a really long time. He was going to be years in separation.
But yeah, so you need to get it from the records, from the people, not from the from him.
From the patient, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you need to get access to the chart, and I think you're allowed to do that by the statute. You know, and have you done that in any other patients where you've demanded?
Yes. Chart?
Well, yeah. I this is one where the human rights issues, I think, come up, jump right at you.
Yeah.
And that have, to, but that's just my initial thoughts. I don't know anything else about the case. I remember you discussing it before and wanting to get plans for the isolation room, etc. And there's no reason they couldn't have given you photographs, so you can't go in there yourself and even take photographs with no one in there, but they probably won't like that. But you know, you truly do need to make sure you see what they're like, and if they're all the same, then you take the word for it, but they're probably not, frankly.
Yeah, we hit a wall on that one. They just said no or something.
Well, you're going next week to tour the forensic unit, right?
Yeah, well, we don't tour. We're going to the gymnasium to have a forensic community meeting.
Okay, well, formally request a tour.
Yeah, okay. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell? Most they can do is say no, and then you say why. Yeah. Then I've got some people in the media you can talk with whom you can speak, as you do too. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Okay, so maybe I think that's a good idea to see the separation policy. If we haven't got, have we gotten it? I know we've asked for so many things.
So yeah, Lori, so we got the definition. They referred us to the administrative code, right, where they just define administrative separation. And it's very broad. And, you know, they very loosely use the word temporary. And I tried seeing if there was, if temporary was defined or limited anywhere, you know. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I couldn't find, like, more detail. And I think some of the points you raise, Dr. Potts, are really interesting. I have a lot of my background actually is in solitary confinement in corrections and detention. So like you might have been referring to like Craig Haney or Stuart Grassian, Terry Cooper, some of those people I'm sure
right. You've
crossed paths with. So what's interesting too is that the American Institute of Architects just recently, December of 2020, put into their code of ethics, and this aligns with the International Committee for the Red Cross and the United Nations, that architects can no longer design spaces that would put an individual in any kind of isolation or solitary confinement for more than 15 days. And that 15 days is a magic number, according to the United Nations. And so I don't know if you've come across that, but that's something that's very new to the Code of Ethics for.
You know, that's very powerful because that's a type of ammunition you get to make ASH update some of the procedures or policies. So looking at this individual and then bringing in some of not the community, but the national or international standards, I think will weigh heavily on it. I mean, they need to come up with, if they have to do one-to-one for, I've got a consult that's had one-to-one for 9 months.
Yeah.
Well, you give them one-to-one,
yeah,
right?
Or two-to-one.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, or else they move the person to prison and say, no, this person is not GEI. We're going to do this. I hate to say it, but they have that option as well.
The person has said prison was much more free and liberating. He said a lot more privileges when he was in prison. He got to go outside, do different things. So he has made that statement more than once.
And I used to give a lecture on guilty except insane, and the subtitle was "You've Got to Be Crazy," in the sense that do a GEI plea is much worse than going to prison for most people because it's longer and you have more restrictions, frankly. Anyway, and if you ever want me to talk about it, I'll be glad to talk about it. I was on the committee that wrote that law.
Oh, that's great, Jack. That would be an interesting, if you'd want to sign up, that'd be an interesting educational, if you give us 30 minutes, that'd be great.
Yeah, and by the way, this next week, I anticipate our central IOC committee will have presentations on the housing, community housing options. In October, they're going to be going to one central housing authority, and I anticipate Access and possibly even ABC will be the ones giving a presentation. So if your membership would like to sit in, they may do so.
I'll forward that because that's something that, you know, we've been, ACME has been following, is that this transition to one provider is a little bit concerning. So we'll see where that goes. But can I can make a formal request that we see the separation policy, a formal request that we tour one of the empty separation rooms. Do I have a second?
And his ISP.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so moved. The other thing is, I think that's really powerful, Melissa, as an architect, as a person that designed the civil side of ASH. It was interesting going there today. She was telling us, pointing out where the gardens used to be, where the church used to be, all the when she designed it, and how much it's changed over the years. But I think it would be very powerful to see how architects can no longer ethically design a room for a person to stay more than 15 days. I'd love to have that brought to our next meeting so we could discuss it.
Sure, that's something I can send you. It's in writing.
Cool. That'd be good. Okay, so the next thing we had was membership recruitment. If you know anyone that's interested in participating in the Independent Oversight Committee, we welcome them and their expertise. So let me know. You know, we have one psychiatric nurse, but she's been swamped working a lot of hours, so she'll be back participating in the fall. But
Lori, you know, I have someone, and she's also a psychiatric nurse. I'll contact her. I don't know if she has has the time because she went back into private practice. So, but okay. I'll let you know.
And it would be nice to get a psychologist on here again. We've had psychologists. One of them had to quit because he was going to do a rotation for his finishing his degree. So he couldn't sit on the committee and do an internship there. And we had another one that had health issues during pregnancy. So it'd be nice if you know any psychologists that would be interested.
And if I may, if any of your committee members know of people who are interested in joining the Central Arizona IOC that deals with the community, we fill the mandatory slots first, you know, the ones that are mandated by a certain membership. But please let me know. And if I know of anyone over there, I think I may know a psychologist or two who might fit. I know I referred one person before they joined for a while, but I'll get back to you.
Oh, that'd be great. Okay, so do we have any new business that we want to speak about before we go on to public comment?
Oh, I want to make a recommendation about a new committee member, but it would be the recommendation is just to get maybe a female previous patient from the state hospital. I don't have any idea who that would be, but that's just something I would like to see, just to kind of get that perspective as well. Because you have the male, I would like to see the female counterpart as well. That would be really nice.
Okay. I'm not sure how we would go about with HIPAA and everything, how we would find out unless we ask someone asked them to post inside for a current patient, because I don't know how to find out people that have been, you know, released from ASH, how we reach them.
So I guess I have a conflict that I need to bring mm-hmm. forward. If I know people who have previously been residents at ASH, mm-hmm. and I reach out to them because I've lived with them, what kind of conflict is that? If any at all?
I don't think so. I mean, you're out. And, right. and they're out. So you just happen to meet. It's like if you met at college, you know?
Right. Okay.
Does all anyone right. else I'll think it's a conflict? I don't think so. Dr. Potts is shaking his head, and he's our expert.
Having dealt with ethics for the Supreme Court, I would suggest it probably isn't a conflict.
Good.
Okay.
So reach out, Leon.
I will. I will definitely do that. That would be nice to see. And, doctor, I wish I would have known you 11 years ago before I signed my plea agreement.
Just as an aside, the biggest mistakes are when plea agreements are signed. The reality is, when we wrote the law, we wrote it so that plea agreements wouldn't be accepted. It would have to be a trial to the bench, because it was going to be too easy to put people in the hospital, and the lawyers thought that they'd get out within 6 weeks. So the intent when we wrote it was that plea agreements would not be permitted. There'd have to be a trial either to the bench or to a jury. It could be a submittal, but still a trial, not a plea agreement. But yeah, it's certainly problematic. Sorry.
Well, that's good to know.
That's good to know.
Okay, so let's, any new business? Okay, so next, I assume, Jack, that your Maricopa IOC will look into the latest incident that happened in the group home?
I anticipate so.
Okay, call to the public. Do we have any public?
Hi. Yeah, my name is Isaac Contreras.
Hi, Isaac. How are you?
Hi. I'm getting by. I just wanted to answer a few questions on the Arizona State Hospital. Arizona State Hospital, Isaac. There's a playlist under it. It's under Juan Romero, and on that playlist, I give an exact of where the space that I'm allowed. I'm not allowed much space. If there's a reason these people don't wanna, wouldn't show, if they had nothing to hide, they will show you guys right away. Look, he has all this space to move, and he has all this, but they don't. And now the recording devices, I have several recording devices. I'm the one that played the recording device where the nurse was saying, I don't wanna lose my job. And I'll put it on, I'll have them put them on YouTube. And also there's other staff members that, it's just posted up on YouTube too, on the Arizona State Hospital audio or legal audio, Isaac. Even the staff member himself say that this is a torture chamber. Now I have more than one staff member saying that this, my conditions that I'm living in is a torture chamber. And that's coming from them. And now they want to change the policy, the things for our property. Well, they think that recording devices are coming in through the mail, and it's not. The recording devices are coming in through their staff members. But yeah, we have now that they got the property thing all messed up. It doesn't make sense, because now it's more institutional. This is supposed to be a place that's supposed to be therapeutic. For me, there's nothing therapeutic. Now, they're going to say a lot of bad things about me, and I know that for a fact, because that's the way they do it. But I could assure you one thing, that I got recordings dating back for 2.5 years of a lot of incidents. So after one incident happens, I basically interview one of the staff members. So, what happened? What do you think? And, And all the time they say, well, we told them to leave, or you did the right thing. I don't know if you guys heard the latest one. he was basically, the staff member was basically bullying us, telling us, threatening us. And, I stood up, you know, I tried to talk to him, then I stood up to him and I went to county jail. And that's the latest one that's up right now. The other one is, where they cover up my window. I have no view of anything. Everything I see is white. Everything I see is white and gray and a black tarp over everything. There is no view. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a saint, but from whatever it is they say, I could provide you recording, recording things of those occasions of whatever it is they're saying that I've done or that I'm doing. Because now, I mean, they always say I'm threatening people. They're always, for some word, they say, I sit, oh, the, this word, I'm a F you up, mother effer. And that is not true. I'm not, I do not say that, but they keep on writing that down. Since I've been in here, I've only had one medical, emergency, which they didn't do nothing about it. They didn't help me. And I haven't had any real misbehaviors. I haven't had any codes call me. And I've been in here for 9 months. And my lawyer is, Josh and Holly. They're helping me out with this. But the hospital is trying to basically, I mean, you don't treat a human being like an animal. I mean, I had to eat with my hands. I don't got a table, a chair. I don't have furniture. I don't have anything. All I have is cameras looking at me and a wall and a bed that's not too comfortable. And it's the reason they don't want recording devices is because a lot of the things are going to fall back on them. A lot of things they're going to have to answer for, because the way they talk to us, the way they treat us, if it was caught on audio, like how I caught a lot of things on audio, they wouldn't be, things would be different. But we always lose the grievances when it comes to ASH. We always lose, and always the staff member is always right. So they never give us the benefit of the doubt. But, yeah, one other thing I want to say is, if anybody knows Randy Lang, he put himself out there to be a lawyer. He started off with trying to represent me, for free. And he ended up turning around and asking my sister for a few thousand dollars, without even my knowledge. And his name is Randy Lang, and he's illegally practicing, being a lawyer. But that's 5 minutes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Isaac. You know, we can't respond to what you're saying, but we do know that you've asked for a visit. So as soon as I can get other members, then we'll plan that.
Okay. Hi, thank you. This is Chris from Sego. Chris Martel.
Now, could you repeat your name? I couldn't hear it.
Chris Martel from Sego.
Oh, hi,
I'd like
Chris.
To say hi,
you want
hi,
your name?
Yes, I do. I'd like to say hi to Jack Potts, Dr. Jack Potts. And I'd also like to back up with what Isaac has said. I was just threatened and being retaliated against Dr. Bowen. He came in, I told him my doctor had been neglecting me and not treating me appropriately. And I said, ACDL has proven this in a different case five and a half years ago. And he said, well, you have to deal with my attorney. And he goes, I know about your 75 grievances, which only one was substantiated. I've been here 7 years. You never win a grievance. That is absolutely right. And then he walked and he said, I know about your 75 grievances. If I were you, you got 5 months left. I'd fly under the radar because you know how PSRB is. And he turned and walked away. So he knew a medical practitioner was mistreating me and neglecting me, and I can prove it. I may have a lot of recordings too on these things. This place is a criminal enterprise, and it can be proven very easily. I think some people don't want it to be proven. We're never right. I had to walk on a broken foot for 4 months. I've asked you guys to call. I asked Kim. I don't know if she's still on the committee. Left her a couple messages. I've tried to get Jackie to call a while back. I stopped attending because I tried to get you guys to come call and you never did. I've got thing after thing. ACDL has substantiated my claim against neglect on Chariot, Terrence Ryan, and Crystal Gilbert, and the Valleywise for neglect. And the retaliation, they took my items, my electronic equipment. They've had it since the 2nd of this month. They won't give it back. They won't. I said if I can't have it, give it back. I'll send it out. They won't do it. I also found out that lecithin, the nutrient supplement, I've had for 16 years. I've had many different medications, and I was diagnosed with Dr. Potts with a personality disorder. However, I've always been diagnosed otherwise by bipolar, paranoid, schizo, persecutory type. I was coming in here from amphetamine-induced psychosis. I had brought in some lecithin. It's a nutrient. It was sunflower lecithin. It's usually used as soy lecithin, and it's in everything. It's an emulsifier. It's completely non-toxic. I have studies on it. It is a very unique polyunsaturated fat. It helps with all my situations, and I was taking it for 2 months. Everybody, including Dr. Morris, my psychiatrist, my nurse, was saying, how did you do this 180 degree turn? You're acting perfect. You're not, your anxiety's not up. You're not acting out. And I said, I don't know. I ran out after 2 months. And I realized after a couple weeks, I started getting the anxiety back. I started feeling tension back. And then I looked up a magazine and saw lecithin and how it worked in your brain. I read, I had Dr. Morris, told Dr. Morris about it. He said, I have no problem. He got shot down by administration. Again, they confiscated some contraband and won't give it back, and also did the retaliation and the threat of PSRB, you know how they are, and flying under the radar, and they denied it. Normally, it just goes to the pharmacy. The pharmacy approved it, and then somehow it went to administration. They denied it. I've got evidence that it works for bipolar mania. It's an older review thing, but evidence on me. It worked on me. When I was on it, I didn't know it was working. And they're like, did you change? I'm like, I feel like God just took me over and I'm a new person. I'm calm. The pressure in my head's gone. So I had experience with it myself working, and they noticed it. A lot of people noticed it. And when I ran out, it came back to the anxiety. They won't give, both of my doctors, my medical and my psychiatrist, both say that it's good for you. It's great. It's one of the most unique and powerful polyunsaturated fats or such. It turns into a certain chemical and saturates certain three parts of your brain. And it works for me. It works for all my pain. I have severe pain, and I have most of my life. I can't take opiates because I'm an addict. It works for pain. It works for cholesterol. It works for lowering blood sugar, fatty liver, rebuilding of nervous system, transmission of nerves, or electrical.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
I'm glad, but we're limiting the time for each of them. But I can't respond to anything. But I hear that you want to visit, so we'll plan one. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else?
Hi, this is Tim Briscoe on Sycamore.
Hi, Tim. Do you want your name and the minutes?
Sure do.
Okay.
First shift, 7:30 in the morning. We are locked out of the dorms. We must urinate or defecate prior to that, or we are watched urinating or defecating by staff after they unlock the two bathrooms out in the outside day room, because all the hall doors are shut and this is med time, they say. But that's still going on. They're watching us. Lack of medical equipment being filled out. I fought a year and a half to get the Freestyle Libre continuous glucose meter. It's a sensor that sticks on your arm on the back, and you wave it over, the sensor, and it gives you a reading of your sugar level. Well, it has a spot for test strips, and I've been asking for test strips since day one when I got it. They keep telling me no. Use the other machine to test your blood. This Libre, it will show a magnifying glass with a blood droplet in it when it wants to see a blood drop on a test strip. Well, they tell me, well, go use the other machine to test your blood and we'll get a different reading. That number is way askew, by 40 to 50 points higher. So I don't understand how they want me to test on one and then go test on another, and what number should I trust? So I've asked for test strips for the one. They keep refusing. I got the manual from the Libre, and on page 6 it says that the test strips are made for the Libre and the solution to calibrate it. So there's no reason that they can't provide the test strips. Also, I'm a fall risk. They put the TSDs on me, on my legs, and they've been bringing the tall van. You have to climb up in, and I have very limited feeling in my left leg, and very weary and shaky on that. Staff on second shift, a lot of sleepers. And the dental is on the civil lobby next to the foot doctor. That's about, whenever I go on ROU, there's a certain staff member that takes away my main coping skill. I don't know why you would take that away after I just had an outburst with you. You take away my main coping skills so I can relax and stay away from you, and it's not returned for a while. Plus, everybody got stimulus checks. Well, I never received my $600 one. I got a letter a couple weeks later saying, thank you for participating in our program. Hope you received your check. And I was very stunned by that. I sent that letter to my mom. She has been investigating this with H&R Block. H&R Block got a hold of the IRS, and they said that the checks have been returned from the hospital. They were delivered to the hospital, a record showing that they were here. They were delivered back there, stating that they could not find or locate person. But whenever I use a funny name like Superzilla or no return name, and it comes back in the mail, return to sender, they have no problem finding me and giving it to me, even when there's no address name, because they know my handwriting. There's one transport person that keeps taking me late to all my appointments. I missed my podiatry that I needed really bad. I had to wait another week because my pickup time was at 8 o'clock in the morning. Pauly transport number 4 did not pick me up until 11:40. So I missed, but thank you very much for your time. And I will see you guys on the 23rd in the gym.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else?
Yes, I'm the Van Platinum and Van Platinum Ethical Advocates. My name is Mr. Charles R. Ed Mark.
What's your name? Charles, do you want your name in the minutes?
Sure. One issue is the Catholic chaplain. It's been quite a few months. We don't have a Catholic chaplain. The person ahead of that search team or committee, Lindsay Aaron, refuses to return calls. The last thing my social worker found out that, hey, nobody's ever applied for the position. So I'm going to have to go to some of my Catholic friends and have them contact the bishop about this. Would appreciate any support. Can I give out my voicemail number? 928-351-7679. And then the second thing is the notary public here. We have some patients that really need a notary because they're involved in court presentations. We have one patient that is currently before a federal judge. We're very proud of him for doing that. Possibly this will have to take a federal judge to enact us having a notary. We'll continue the successes to everyone. 928-351-7679. Appreciate your time. The very best.
Thank you, Charles. Do you have anyone else?
Laurie, hi, it's Holly Giesel.
Hi, Holly.
I wanted to let you know, I have a complete set of all the ASH policies, but you don't have to go through the formality of going and sending a request. Do an information request to the librarian, and she's very, and it's a matter of, it's publicly available, and she'll send them to you. I will send you the one on administrative, but sort of a good practice so that you have them is just every 6 months, just ask, send an email and ask. Hmm. And they sometimes will send them electronically. I don't know, Jackie does it, but it's always handy to have them. And there is a specific one on administrative segregation. But all the policies are there. It's a nice thick stack, and you can get an index of them, a table of contents. Like, you probably don't want, hypothetically, you probably don't want the policy on when they need to get a new, you know, boiler system or something, or mm-hmm. heating system. But so you can get a table of contents and then, you know, choose all the ones you want and then just calendar. Ask for a whole new set.
Hmm. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else?
That's all.
Do we have anyone else?
Sir Briscoe again.
Mm-hmm.
I have asked for a notary of the public prior, and I was refused. I told them I would pay for it, even though they have one here at the hospital, and I was still refused to have access to that, and it was legal documents I needed taken care of.
Hmm. Sorry to hear that, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else? Well, we have a lot going on, and I'm very glad that they're starting the forums up. It was a pleasure to meet with the civil patients today and some of the administration, and we look forward to visiting next week. In addition, we've heard three members want visits, so once we can schedule at least two of us, we will be calling you. Hopefully soon, but hang in there and let us know anytime you have a concern or want to talk to us. But thanks, everyone.
One last thing, please. There is no limit on extensions when you're filing grievances and complaints. When they give you an extension, after the acknowledgement letter, there's no limit on extensions that they can have use of. I have a case going back from May of 2020, and all I do is keep getting extensions from the same person. That's all I had to say. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
And I have to add to that that there's nothing we can do. They lie. All the staff, most of the staff lie. We report them. We report abuse. I've tried to call the police. There's nothing we can do when they wrong us. The grievances don't work. Staff don't care. They all lie for each other. APS can't view the video. They can't talk to patient witnesses. All they do is come out and talk to the people who are complaining about. That's all I had to say is we have nowhere to turn when they wrong us, and they wrong us on a daily basis, it seems. Thank you.
Thank you. We are working on trying to resolve matters, as you probably heard earlier in the meeting. But thank you.
Holly, I forgot one thing I wanted to mention. I think that one of the most important issues that's confronting the patients at ASH in the coming year to 18 months is what the PSRB and ASH are going to do about the suspension of privileges mm-hmm. as granted by the PSRB due to COVID. Mm-hmm. The problem is, as you know, if you know the PSRB system, you have to complete levels, and those at times the PSRB will give a specific time frame. You have to stay at phase one, level one for 6 months or 8 months or 18 months. So if you've lost a year, which people are going to at least lose that much, you in effect have lost all the benefit that you got from going to your statutory hearing and getting your level. So that's the first problem. It's what is going to be the remedial steps that the PSRB and ASH will work out? Because it takes both of them. Well, sometimes it does. If the PSRB is not going to be willing, as I don't think they will be, to revisit some of these on sort of an emergency basis and work with ASH, and if ASH won't work with the PSRB, the patients at ASH have lost at least 15 to 18 months of their life in terms of being able to get their levels, begin reintegration, and make progress. It's a fancy legal term. That's just wrong. And I would hope that there could be some engagement about the violation of rights, particularly the individuals with SMI, when they've just been put on hold. It's something that really bothers me. It worries me. So I want to put that out there as, you know, as you're focusing maybe on things that you want to focus on or that are priorities. I think in terms of the well-being of the forensic population, how to deal with the loss of their therapeutic progress through the conditional release privileges is just, I think, of utmost importance.
I agree. Thank you, Holly. Okay. And with that, I call motion for adjournment.
Almost in that, it's Steve.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.